Well, my hope is that everybody has a healthy, happy, and safe New Year. But beyond that, I hope that they understand that we're in a better position than any country in the world to lead the world. And we're coming back, and it's about time.
It may be about time, but the poll numbers are not coming back for Joe Biden. In fact, they're getting really, really bad as we start this new year. Here on The Dana Show, it's me, Rich Zeoli, in for Dana today. Happy New Year. Hope you had a great weekend. And can't believe the holidays are over. It's hard to believe. It really is. But it always flies by, doesn't it? Like a blur. It's all this build up. And then all of a sudden you look back and you go, how did that just happen? And that's always the way it is. But as we start 2024, there's a lot to think about. Obviously, number one, or more states now are taking former President Donald Trump off the ballot. We know that Maine is doing this. And even David Axelrod is saying that this is playing right into former President Trump's hands and that this is going to cause people to rebel and they're not going to be happy with this. So Democrats are now saying this is a problem for them as well. But they're still doing it and more of them are going to do it. And I don't think it's going to survive a Supreme Court challenge. But nevertheless, this is what the blue states want to do. They keep helping Trump. They keep boosting Trump up. Even Karl Rove, who's no Trump fan, was out there saying the exact same thing, that by doing this, they're just helping Trump. But as far as Biden goes, he's beginning the new year, and it's not good. I mean, the interview with Ryan Seacrest wasn't good either. It was pre-recorded. Nobody watched it. I mean, who's watching that show anyway? Certainly not me. I don't think anybody was. But he begins the new year, New York Post story here. Biden rings in the new year with Black and Hispanic voters abandoning him, according to a new poll. They are abandoning him. It's a USA Today Suffolk University poll that indicates that the president is trailing former President Donald Trump 37% to 39%. And the big reason is because he cannot hold together the coalition of voters who supported him in 2020. Among Black voters, Biden's support has declined to 63%, down from 87% in 2020. He still leads Trump 12% support by a yawning margin. Voters under 35 and Hispanic voters have jumped to support Trump, with the former president leading in both demographics. Why do you think that is? I know the answer. It's number one, the economy. They're feeling the effects of the economy just like you, just like me. And number two, it's the illegal immigration problem. It is a problem. I was listening to a Black woman over the weekend, a Black woman voter over the weekend, who was saying, you know, this is these people are coming here. They're competing with us. They're taking our jobs. This isn't right. There's a whole busload of illegal immigrants who were just dropped off in New Jersey. I just saw them. They're being dropped off in New Jersey. I think 450 of them. So all these problems are plaguing Biden. And of course, the corporate media wants everybody to think that, nah, everything's fine. Biden's great. He's in great shape. Democrats know he's a disaster in the making. And they don't want him on the ballot. They don't want him to be their nominee. Joe Biden spent the weekend in St. Croix in the Virgin Islands, because obviously there's a lot of electoral votes in the Virgin Islands. So he was there really chasing them down at a very, very posh palatial estate. He has not worked much in 2023. I think his record of going out and enjoying himself on vacation, he was away at either his Delaware beach house or his posh Wilmington home or places like St. Croix or Martha's Vineyard 37% of the time. Okay. Now look, I know presidents are always president. So wherever they go, the operation follows them. I get it. Okay, fine. Okay. But the thing about Biden is that he projects an image of a guy sleeping on the beach. As Americans are working harder than ever, trying to get by, Biden projects an image of sleeping on the beach. And now Donald Trump is leading among Hispanic and Black voters, who are both demographics are now saying, guy's better for us. He's better for the economy. America's better. America was better then. This is not good for Joe Biden. I mean, to start the year with these kind of numbers, it's not good. Trump now leads Biden 37% to 33% among young voters and 39% to 34% among Hispanic voters. Donald Trump is beating Joe Biden among Hispanic voters. And Donald Trump is beating Joe Biden among Black voters as well. It's a real problem. And you cannot sit here and tell me that they don't look at that problem with the southern border, that wide open southern border where you have an invasion going on, and literally now people are just crossing the border, and we're doing nothing to stop it, and you can't tell me they're okay with this. What? Because they're Hispanic, they're okay with it? They want open borders because they're Hispanic? No, of course not. I shared with you, I think it was the week before, last week, when I was filling in for Dana, this big story in Politico, how they were talking about all these Mexican American voters in Texas who are all hoping that Trump comes back. They're all waiting for Trump to come back and do something about the border. Now, look, whether it's Trump or it's somebody else, and we're going to see what happens now in the presidential primary, because before you know it, it's Iowa, it's New Hampshire. Before you know it, this is going to go full steam ahead. This week's a little bit off because everybody's kind of adjusting. For example, getting the kids out the door today to school was not easy. Everybody was tired and cranky. I'm tired and cranky. You're probably tired and cranky too. A little too much partying over the weekend. The whole New Year's Eve thing on a Sunday night. So New Year's Day is Monday. And then here we are Tuesday. The good news is, of course, it's a short week. But before you know it, everything is full steam ahead. Full steam ahead in a big way. And we are going to have to see what happens with the presidential primary for the Republicans. Will DeSantis stay in? That's the big question as we start 2024. Will Governor Ron DeSantis stay in the race? He's telling everybody yes. But there's more and more articles coming out that are saying that they are now trying to make the patient comfortable, which is a reference to hospice. Now, you know it's over, and now you're just trying to make him comfortable. They had a big ad buy they pulled back on, and the money's drying up, and that's the problem. Meanwhile, the Republican establishment has completely rallied around Nikki Haley. You're hoping Nikki Haley can be the one to stop Trump. There's rumors that Chris Christie's going to drop out. Chris Christie says he's not dropping out. I think it's irrelevant whether or not Chris Christie stays in or doesn't. I don't think it matters. But he's going to stay in because I think at this point, what he's doing is he's going to play offense for Nikki Haley to try to buttress Vivek Ramaswamy, who's playing offense, obviously, for Trump. Ramaswamy hopes that if Trump becomes president, he will land a cool job in the cabinet. Or maybe he'll become the Republican National Chairman. He would do well in both capacities. He's got a lot to offer. He's young. He's talented. He's a lot to offer. He's not going to be the nominee. He knows he's not going to be the nominee. So he's there to do the job on the debate stage that, ironically enough, Chris Christie did for Trump in 2016. If you remember back in 2016 in the Republican primary debates, as we got towards the early part of the year, when Trump was facing Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, and Chris Christie got on the debate stage that one day and just took down Rubio. That whole thing about, there he goes with that whitewashed, you know, slick Washington prepared package, whatever he said. And it really hurt Rubio. And then Christie drops out of the race, and then he endorses Trump. So Christie now is doing the same thing for Nikki Haley. Every time he gets on the debate stage, he battles Vivek to try to help Haley. And Haley is, she hates Vivek Ramaswamy, obviously. And he's up there on the stage to try to battle for Trump so that anybody who goes after Trump, he goes after them. And then the idea would be Christie will land in a Haley administration as Attorney General of the United States of America, and Vivek would land in Trump's administration in some capacity or another. Now, the reality is that everything relies on whether or not Governor Ron DeSantis can do well in Iowa and New Hampshire. And if he can't, then the party is going to say, because the establishment still does not want Trump. That's very obvious. Right? The Republican establishment still does not want Trump. Democrats would be okay with Nikki Haley. No, she's all in on the Ukraine war. So she'll give them the Ukraine war, and they're okay with that. They can live with that. The swamp will be fine, because all the people that make the money on things like war, they'll be just fine. So they'll be okay with it. They won't lose any sleep over that. But they got to stop Trump. So that's job number one. And if DeSantis can't do it, then they're going to put all their eggs in Nikki Haley's basket. And they're just basically, that's what's going to happen from now until you get into the later primary elections. Now, Super Tuesday in March. If you remember, it was the Friday before Christmas week. So it was that Friday before Christmas weekend when the United States Supreme Court came out and said, in a breaking decision, we are not going to fast track the request by the special counsel, Jack Smith, to look into whether or not Donald Trump has immunity from his actions related to January 6th because he was president of the United States. We're not going to jump in and fast track this. It's going to have to go through the D.C. Circuit Court process. What that means is that That has to play out, and that could take months. And then however it plays out, the Supreme Court's ultimately going to hear it. And the court could have just said, we'll hear it now, and then we'll let you then make a decision. You know, we'll make a decision whether or not you can even go forward with this. And if you can, well, there you go. The problem for the special counsel, Jack Smith, who is an unconstitutional special counsel, as I outlined with you before Christmas, he has never had any Senate confirmation. He should not be there. He's not a proper United States special counsel because he was not a U.S. attorney when he was elevated to that position, unlike David Weiss, who's a special counsel going after the Bidens. But the point is that now Jack Smith's fantasy dream of having Trump on trial prior to Super Tuesday is over. That's not going to happen now. Super Tuesday's March. He was hoping to start this trial before Super Tuesday so he could turn around and show everybody, look at the former president. He's on trial. Look at him. He's going down. And you Republicans can't back this guy. Not going to happen now. So that completely ruined Jack Smith's Christmas. I mean, oh, he had a terrible Christmas and a terrible New Year's. It was such a terrible way for Jack Smith to end his year. And whatever happens with the D.C. Circuit Court, whether they come out and they say, yeah, Trump has immunity claims or Trump doesn't have immunity claims, that will get appealed to the Supreme Court. So this whole thing of Trump going on trial for all the charges related to January 6th and election denialism and all the other stuff, all of that could go well past the election for president. I mean, it could go well into 2025. And then at that point, of course, if Trump wins, he's pardoning himself anyway. So then this whole thing is a moot point. And if you get too close to an election, the court's going to say, we can't do this because we have an election here. If it's within 90 days, it's kind of an unspoken rule. And if you're 90 days before the election, you're not going on trial here. The trial can't happen. It's just not fair. It's not fair to the candidates. It's not fair to the voters. It's not going to happen. So if that becomes the situation, then all of the whole little fantasy of going after Trump related to January 6th goes away. But Jack Smith is still going to add more charges. I'm fully convinced that all these states now that are coming out and banning Trump from the ballot using the 14th Amendment, Section 3 of that amendment, to say he's ineligible to run, he's ineligible to be on the ballot because he's an insurrectionist. The missing piece in all this, of course, is that Donald Trump has not been charged with anything related to that, let alone found guilty. I think Jack Smith wants to remedy that by adding charges to Donald Trump's already long federal indictment. But it also becomes moot because the question then, of course, would be, is he immune from this? You'd have to have a trial around that, a Supreme Court appeal. Good luck wrapping all that up by November of 2024. And today, Trump is going to appeal Colorado and Maine's rulings officially to the Supreme Court of the United States, who I believe will look at this and say, based on the original intent of the framers of the 14th Amendment, the ratifiers, the adopters, etc., they did not want this to apply to presidents. And that'll be the end of that. And all of this goes on. So the bottom line is Joe Biden's got a problem because Trump is beating him in key demographics that Joe Biden needs. And every Republican's beating him in key demographics that Joe Biden needs. So now the Democrats have to start 2024 asking themselves a very serious question. Do they really want this guy as their nominee? This is the Dana Show. It's me, Rich Zeoli, in for Dana as we begin a new year together. It's great to have you here. We're coming right back.
The virtue signaling has come to roost. As the U.S. reaches its highest level of illegal border crossings ever recorded, are leftist mayors still calling their cities sanctuary cities? Now that the problem is visible, these cities are on the brink of collapse. Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, because knowledge is your ultimate superpower.
Indeed it is, the Dana Show. Great to be with you today. We got a lot to chat about. Trump's poll numbers, Biden's poll numbers, and what will happen when the appeal goes to the United States Supreme Court today about Colorado and Rhode Island banning him from the ballot. But I got five things for you to start the new year. Let's do it.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
You know, CNN hosts wasted no time to start drinking on the network's New Year's Eve broadcast. You didn't watch this, and I didn't watch this either. But Anderson Cooper and Andy Cohen were ringing in the new year, and drinking. They were sober last year. It was a short-lived no booze on the broadcast mandate after I think it was Don Lemon who got toasted and lost his mind last year. This year, though, they were back to drinking shots. So doing shots on New Year's Eve, and there you go. This, of course, is because the new CEO, Chris Licht, I guess, has much more of a sense of humor. The no drinking policy just didn't go over well last year. Again, you didn't watch, I didn't watch, so it's kind of a moot point. In New York City now, the 25-year office construction boom, a transformed New York City skyline, has hit the brakes, driven in part by record office vacancies. People are still not coming back to the office. Perhaps COVID, maybe because crime, maybe it's both. Higher construction costs, thanks to Biden's economy, and the effects of increased remote work are playing a role in the shift. And now the opening of large office buildings in the borough of Manhattan will slow down after 2025. The enviable run in the construction of skyline-defining office buildings in the Big Apple, at least for now, is on hold. The United States office buildings, in fact, face a $117 billion debt time bomb. Mortgages are due this year. They threaten to sink the United States economy as thousands of workplaces remain empty. Hundreds of loans on office buildings are about to come due at a very bad time. Loans were taken out in time of low interest rates, and now they're very hard to refinance. And a lot of people are just still not coming back to the office. And if they are, they might be driving green cars. Well, you know, these green cars, they're very funny to me. A cargo ship carrying burning lithium-ion batteries reaches Alaska, but is kept offshore for safety. A large cargo ship with a fire in its hold being kept 2 miles offshore of an Alaskan port as a precaution, while efforts are undertaken to extinguish the flames from all of these lithium-ion batteries for all these rechargeable cars. So there you go. And in Britain, British police are now probing a virtual rape in the metaverse. That's right. Young girl's digital persona sexually attacked in the metaverse. So now I guess we'll have Big Brother looking at what we do online and charging people with crimes. Interesting. More to come on The Dana Show. Don't go away.
Looking for the drive-through version of The Dana Show? Check out the best highlights from every show and Dana's Absurd Truth podcast, posted daily from The Dana Show.
My duty under the Constitution and Maine law is to review the facts and issue determination. And my political affiliation, my personal views of January 6, 2021, had no bearing on my decision. My decision was based on the facts, the law, and the Constitution presented to me in this hearing under Maine law.
That was the Maine Secretary of State who decided to take former President Trump off the ballot. Welcome back to The Dana Show. Great to have you with us today. It's me, Rich Zeoli, in for Dana. The question, of course, though, is what was your basis for that? You know, what was your basis under Maine law to take him off the ballot? Now, the United States Constitution is very clear on what the parameters are for somebody to be able to run for president. You got to be 35, not 40. 35 is the minimum age at the time that you'll be elected president. You have to be born in the United States of America. You have to live in the country for a certain period of time. That's it. I mean, that's it. Very simple. You don't have to have an IQ. You don't have to have money. You don't have to have good looks or charm, although those things certainly help. No question about it. Hair helps. That's why if Gavin Newsom does become the Democrat nominee with that wonderful coif of hair, with all that petroleum in it, the guy's the carbon footprint of Gavin DeSantis's hair is more than John Kerry's jet. He uses that much petroleum-based product in his hair. I mean, it's just glorious. But that's it. So what's the basis for the Maine Secretary of State keeping him off the ballot? It's not like she said, well, he's born in Germany, or he's 20, or he hasn't lived in America for 7 years. So what's your basis for that? And this is the problem. It's the same problem that Colorado has. You just don't get to decide on your own that somebody took part in an insurrection. You just can't just decide that on your own. You know, there has to be in this country due process. There has to be a process behind these things. You don't just get to make those determinations. And thank God you don't, because it'd be very easy for a Republican Secretary of State to turn around and go, I think Joe Biden took part in an insurrection at the southern border by letting the entire border be wide open and everybody come here and take over the country. So in my mind, that's exactly like a rebellion against the United States of America, and this dude's facilitating it. So I'm keeping him off the ballot. And it's only a matter of time until Republican secretaries of state start doing that. just for nothing else than to gain attention and prove how absurd it is that a state can just make that determination without any sort of proceeding whatsoever. You know, if a state has reason to believe somebody was not born in the United States of America, well, there's a process by which they can say you need to prove your citizenship. Of course, if somebody brings that up about a Democrat, then that's racist and you're a conspiracy theorist and everything like that. Theoretically, that's the process you'd use. Now, if somebody were to turn around and say, I think this candidate wasn't actually born in, I don't know, let me use a hypothetical state, Hawaii. I think he might have born in, I don't know, let me use a hypothetical country like Kenya or something. Well, theoretically, a state could turn around and say, well, I want to see your birth certificate. But they would scream racism and they would scream conspiracy theory. And so the states would never even ask. They would just keep the person on the ballot and that would be the end of it. But with this, there's not even a process where you can say, well, show me the papers that show you were convicted by a federal court of the crime of insurrection. You haven't even been charged with it, let alone convicted of it. So what's the process? How do you just determine this? And what gives a state the right to just determine out of thin air that somebody's ineligible? There is no, that's the problem. They don't have that right. You don't have the right to do that. The Constitution's very clear. All of these people keep making this absurd analogy that, well, I mean, if somebody was born in another country, we wouldn't put them on the ballot. Correct, but that's what the Constitution says. Constitution says that. You don't get the right to then do extra constitutional things outside of what the United States Constitution says for eligibility to be president of the United States. And here's Jamie Raskin, a guy who, by the way, tried to stop the certification of Donald Trump in 2017. In January of 2017, Jamie Raskin stood up and tried to keep Trump from being certified as president of the United States, arguing that Florida's ballots should be thrown out. He did not get a senator to join in. And then Vice President Joe Biden said, shut up and sit down. But Raskin has always been an election denial guy, and he still is now. But this is the absurd analogy the Democrats are using. Cut 15.
I think that the urgency is for the Supreme Court to act, but I think it's going to be tough for some of them if they want to keep Trump on the ballot, if they're falling for the argument that this is undemocratic. I mean, is it undemocratic that Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jennifer Granholm can't run for president because they weren't born in the country? If you think about it, of all the forms of disqualification we have, the one that disqualifies people for engaging in insurrection is the most democratic.
It's the most democratic. How? What's the process to determine somebody engaged in an insurrection? You just proved my point. Yeah, Arnold Schwarzenegger was not born in this country. Jennifer Granholm was not born in this country, which I didn't know that, by the way. But that's because there was a process wherein somebody gave birth to them and they were given that and they were born in another country. And there's a birth certificate that shows they were born in another country. So the process to find that out is very simple. But when you say somebody engaged in an insurrection, how do you prove that? You don't just go, it's a state of mind kind of thing. It's kind of like obscenity. You know when you see it. That's not how it works in this country. So we don't just assume guilt. We have something called due process. It's pesky, I know, and it gets in the way a lot of the time. But we don't just get to say somebody's guilty because we think they're guilty. If we think somebody did something, we charge them, and then we have what's called a trial and due process. And then if they're found guilty of that, well, then a state can turn around and say, based on this document I have in my hands from the United States Criminal Court of the District of Columbia or whatever, you're ineligible to run. Or because Congress ruled you're ineligible to run or whatever. Then I have something to work with here. No different than if Arnold Schwarzenegger tries to file in Maine and the Secretary of State of Maine says, you know, I heard this wacky rumor that you were actually not born here. I think you were born in Austria, right? I don't know. Maybe it's a rumor, but I heard it. So can you show me your birth certificate? Now, since it's Schwarzenegger, they wouldn't scream racism, obviously. But Arnold Schwarzenegger could turn around and go, that whole thing, I was born here. We made up that whole Austria thing. It was all made up. I was born right here. Well, I don't think you were because I've been a huge fan of yours. I followed your career, loved you in Terminator and the Kindergarten Cop, obviously. It's not a Tuma. So I want to know your birth certificate, please. I'd like you to show that to me. Well, no, okay, well, if you don't, then I'm not going to put you on the ballot. Now, then at that point, if Arnold Schwarzenegger was serious about trying to prove that he was, in fact, born in America, and this whole thing that he was born in Austria was just to help boost his career, he can sue the state, take them to court, and then the judge would say, well, show me your birth certificate. Let's put this to bed once and for all. And then at that point, if he turns around and it went, oh, it was a shock. Oh, he was actually born in America. He let everybody think it was Austria, because how cool is that? Then the federal judge would turn around to the state and say, put him on the ballot. If, in fact, in that moment, the judge said, show me your paperwork. And the guy, the Schwarzenegger, turns around and goes, all right, it was Austria. Try to pull one over on you. Then the judge would turn around to the state, tell the Secretary of State, you are in the right to keep this man off the ballot as per the United States Constitution, Article 2. It's very, very clear in what the requirements are. And like I said, there are not many. But this whole idea of an insurrection, you don't just get to assume somebody's guilty of that because you watched something happen on television. And you saw with your own eyes what happened on January 6th, and therefore you've decided he's guilty. That's not how we do things in this country. Even when you watch somebody commit a crime, even when you see somebody commit a crime with your own two eyes, they still have a right to a trial. They still have a right to prove in court. Well, actually, the state has to still prove they did it, even though everybody's like, we saw it happen. It's on camera. The guy still gets a trial. It's not even like we have this thing in our country where as long as we all know he did it, there's no trial. Because if that was the case, O.J. Simpson would be in prison right now. And there are people who are caught on camera committing crimes all the time. They go to court. They plead not guilty. Everybody knows they're guilty. But the judge doesn't just walk in the chambers on the first day, leave his chambers, sit down in court and go, listen, let's all save the taxpayers a lot of time and money. I know he did it. You know he did it. We all know he did it. So we're not even going to have a trial. He's guilty. Get him out of here. No, the Sixth Amendment's very clear. Excuse me. He still gets a trial. And yeah, this is probably going to be a layup. But nevertheless, whole pesky due process thing. Sometimes it gets in the way. And this is where, excuse me, these states have such a problem. Because Trump has not even been charged with these things, let alone found guilty. Here's the Colorado Secretary of State, Jenna Griswold. And again, you don't get to just decide this on your own. There's a process that the United States Constitution requires for any American who's accused of a crime. And the Due Process Clause of the Constitution is very important. You don't get to just skip ahead, skip past the charges, skip past the trial, and just determine somebody's guilt. Cut 18.
I think it's important to note that we are only here because Donald Trump incited the insurrection. He has created the situation for himself. There is clear language in the Constitution in Section 3 of the 14th Amendment for this exact situation. I believe he is a threat to democracy, the right to vote, and the future stability of this nation. But of course, we'll await to see what the U.S. Supreme Court says.
Yeah, we will probably wait to what the Supreme Court says. We see what she says. She goes, we're only here because Donald Trump incited an insurrection, according to you. And that's an opinion and you're allowed to have it because America, that's the beautiful thing about America. You can have opinions like that, but you don't get to deny somebody their due process rights under the Constitution because it's your personal opinion that they're guilty. I think O.J. did it. You know, I'm pretty certain. I think everybody knows O.J. did it. We all know he did it. I think everybody knows that O.J. Simpson is guilty of murder. But we still did the trial, and he was found not guilty, and that's how it is, whether you like it or not. And so the Colorado Secretary of State can sit there and believe O.J. Simpson's guilty, just like I can believe O.J. Simpson's guilty. It doesn't make O.J. Simpson guilty in the eyes of the law if a jury said he wasn't. It doesn't mean he's not guilty. Of course he's guilty, but under the eyes of the law, he's not guilty because a jury found him not guilty. And it's the same thing with Trump. You can believe he incited an insurrection, but just because you believe it is irrelevant. In the eyes of the law, he's an innocent man who has not even been accused of that crime, let alone found guilty of that crime. And so as long as that is the case, as long as that is our system here, you don't get to just ban somebody from the ballot. Like I said, if somebody shows up and tries to file with a state and the Secretary of State looks at that person and goes, how old are you, kid? And the person says, I'm 35. And, you know, his voice cracks and he's all pimply and, you know, clearly in high school. The Secretary of State says, well, I think you're not eligible based on the United States Constitution. Can you show me something that has your age on it? And the kid's like, I'm not showing you anything. You put me on that ballot. Well, the Secretary of State's going to say no. The kid's going to go to court and the judge is going to say you're not eligible. It's very, but the Constitution outlines that. And there's a clear process in which somebody can prove their age and prove where they were born and prove how long they've lived in the United States of America. But to say that that's the equivalent of arguing somebody's guilty of a federal crime against the United States of America just because you believe it's so, and there's no process to prove that, and there has not been a process to prove that, yet you've determined that, means that you have completely shredded the Due Process Clause of the United States Constitution and every fundamental aspect about American justice, which is that you are an innocent person in the eyes of the law until you are proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt by a jury of your peers. This is The Dana Show. It's me, Rich Zeoli, in for Dana. Lot to chat about as we begin the new year. Glad you're here.
Don't let FOMO get the best of you. Stay in the loop and ahead of the curve by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, the other part about this, too, as the states begin to take Trump off the ballot, there's a problem fundamentally with democracy that even Democrats are acknowledging here. David Axelrod, who was the guy who got Barack Obama elected president of the United States. Remember, he went on a tweet storm after they had the little Obama reunion weekend in Chicago. And it was the Friday, Saturday, big reunion, 15th anniversary of the historic win. And then on Sunday, Axelrod sitting there, I don't know, maybe he's got a Bloody Mary, maybe just a nice coffee beverage. I don't know what the man's Sunday post-weekend activity cocktail or drink is. I don't know. I know that most people, the Sunday after a wedding, probably have a Bloody Mary or mimosa. But, you know, that's I'm not judging. I'm just simply observing here. Anyway, Axelrod's sitting there. And he's tweeting away. He's tweeting away about how Joe Biden can't win. And he's going on this whole thing, this whole tweet storm. And he would not have done that unless he had permission from the big guy himself, Barack Obama, to take Joe Biden out. And Axelrod, even he knows that taking Trump off the ballot is bad. It's not good. It doesn't help. It hurts Democrats. It helps boost Trump up. But it's also fundamentally a problem for democracy as well. And Democrats continuing to do this are only hurting themselves as they make Trump more powerful, politically speaking. So here's David Axelrod over the weekend, cut number 20.
All of this is strengthening him in the Republican primary. We've run this experiment. He's only gained since he started getting indicted. What you thought might be kryptonite for him has turned out to be battery packs. And this is a big one for him. Presumably, the Supreme Court will deal with it fairly quickly. And I expect that they will leave him on the ballot. And yes, Brianna, I have very, very strong reservations about all of this. I do think it would rip the country apart if he were actually prevented from running, because tens of millions of people want to vote for him. I think if you're going to beat Donald Trump, you're going to probably have to do it at the polls.
You're going to have to do it at the polls because people don't like to be denied their choice of who they want to vote for. They don't like, it's not American. It's fundamentally un-American to do this. And Axelrod knows this. And he's smart enough to understand, too, that what Democrats are doing by making this assumption could really come back and bite Democrats right in the rear end if Republican secretaries of state or Republican states decide to do this to them. We just can't get into this game now where states assume that they have powers that they don't have because the Constitution says something that they think they automatically get to apply without that whole pesky due process thing. You don't get to just turn around and say, well, the impeachment clause is pretty clear. And even though they didn't impeach the president, they should have. So since they didn't, we're going to take it upon ourselves to remove him because we think he should have been impeached and removed from office. So we're not going to let him on the ballot. Say what? No, you don't get to just skip all that other stuff. that's required under the Constitution of the United States of America. You don't get to just skip that. You don't get to just press fast forward and then just go to the end. It's like a choose your own adventure, and you choose the part that you like. It's not how it works under the United States Constitution, and thank God it doesn't. All right, coming up in hour number two here, the Dana Show. Immigration, it's a huge problem. The Democrat mayor of a city in North Jersey just came out and said, we don't want these people here. They're illegal immigrants. They don't belong here. As more illegal immigrants are dropped off, busloads of them at a time, here in the United States of America under Joe Biden. This is The Dana Show. It's me, Rich Zeoli, in for Dana. Hour number two is straight ahead. Happy New Year. Glad you are here. Texas and Louisiana are sending hundreds of migrants to New Jersey. Welcome back to The Dana Show. It's me, Rich Zeoli, from Dana's affiliate in Philadelphia. Great to be with you as we begin 2024. A year of unpredictability, presidential election year, the entire House of Representatives up for re-election, many senators up for re-election. It's going to be fun, kids. So strap in. A little bit later today, we're expecting that former President Trump will officially ask the United States Supreme Court to review the decision by Colorado and Maine to bar him from the presidential ballot. I imagine the Supreme Court will accept the request to hear it. They will grant cert, and we will see what they say. The governor of New Jersey, the king, King Philip the Unaccountable, as I call him, he's not happy about the fact that there are illegal immigrants being dropped off in his sanctuary state of New Jersey, much like how the mayor of a city in New Jersey, it's called Edison, New Jersey, who's a Democrat, says migrants dropped off at the New Jersey train station are not welcomed in the township. And the mayor of Secaucus, New Jersey, Secaucus, as the locals say it up there, also not happy. The mayor of Secaucus, New Jersey, says buses of migrants bound for New York City have been stopping at the train station in his town and others in an apparent effort to evade an executive order by New York's mayor trying to regulate how and when migrants can be dropped off in the city. Secaucus Mayor Michael Ganelli said Sunday that Secaucus police and town officials have been told by Hudson County officials about the arrival of buses at the train station in Secaucus Junction beginning on Saturday. He said four buses were believed to have arrived and dropped off migrants who then took trains into New York City. Wow. Huh. Interesting. Ganelli said the executive order signed recently by Mayor Eric Adams of New York requires bus operators to provide at least 32 hours advance notice of arrivals and to limit the hours of drop-off times. Quote from the mayor, he said, it seems quite clear the bus operators are finding a way to thwart the requirements of the executive order by dropping migrants at the train station in Secaucus and having them continue to their final destination. He suggested that the order by Mayor Eric Adams may be too stringent and is resulting in unexpected consequences. He called the tactic a loophole that bus operators have found to allow migrants to reach New York City, and added that state police have reported that this is now happening at train stations throughout the state. My question is, what gives the mayor of New York the right to tell these people when they can come to his city? I mean just follow the logic here of Democrats. The logic of Democrats is, America's open. You come on in. You come on in, and when you get here, you get to go anywhere you want. We'll give you a court date for 19 years in the future, and you better show up. But in the meantime, do whatever you want. Go anywhere you want. If you need funds, if you need food stamps, whatever you need, knock yourself out, go work, go have fun. We'll even let you vote in some places. And we'll use you as we apportion seats in the House of Representatives. In fact, today, Congressman Tom Massey, Republican congressman from Kentucky, he proposed a constitutional amendment to say that when they do the allocation of seats, there's 435 seats in the House of Representatives, and they obviously are determined by population. His amendment says you can only use U.S. citizens when you apportion these districts, because obviously when you're allowing illegal immigrants to be counted, those states are going to get more representatives in the House because it's going to look like they've got higher population numbers. But Massey's point is That's not the intent of the Constitution. The intent of the Constitution is to ensure that we have equal representation in the House of Representatives for United States citizens. And so counting illegal immigrants for the purposes of that is unconstitutional. And he's right. He's absolutely right. So he wants to pass this constitutional amendment to fix that. And I hope it passes. But, I mean, good luck in this country with Democrats running things. Good luck letting them even see the light of day with an amendment like that, because the blue states are benefiting. But what gives Eric Adams the right to say when you can come to New York City if you're an illegal immigrant? New York City's open. The city's open. You can't tell people what hours they can come. Why are illegal immigrants any different? I mean, he's a Democrat. This is the mind. Democrats have created this problem. They've created this open borders problem. They created sanctuary cities. They created this mindset that no human is illegal. So if no human is illegal, you've seen that in the signs, right? Your lefty neighbors have those signs on their lawn. We believe in science. No human is illegal. Hate has no home here. If you believe that no human's illegal, then how can you tell a human what time they can come into your city? And how do you tell bus operators you can only drop off these human beings under these certain hours and you must give advance notice? And how can you do that? I mean, you're a Democrat. You think no human's illegal. You think everybody, they should all have sanctuary. So this is the equivalent of, you ever have somebody who invites people over to their house? They don't really mean it, though. You know, they go like, hey, listen, anytime you want to drop by, drop by. And you tell people that, you don't mean it, though. And then all of a sudden, one day, there's a knock on your door, and it's your neighbor's like, hey, you said we can come by anytime that we want, so we decided to just drop in. And you're not ready for them. You have nothing prepared. See, as an Italian, I get very nervous about that, too. People come over, if I don't have enough food, I get, physically ill, you know what I mean? But now you've just told everybody, come on in. And now they showed up at your door, and you didn't really want them there. But it's awkward. You're like, come on in, or I'm taking a shower, or can you come back? And why'd you extend this open door invitation if you didn't ever think we'd actually take you up on it? It's a good learning lesson. If you've ever had somebody do the drop-in at your house, you know exactly what I'm talking about. The drop-in. It is drop-in. And you're not ready for this. And you didn't mean it when you said it in the first place. Well, these Democrat cities never meant it when they said no human is illegal. And they never meant it when they said we're a sanctuary city. They thought these were woke, virtue signaling things that would never come back to bite them in the you-know-what. And of course, now it's coming back to bite them. And they're not happy about it. And they don't want it. Because they didn't mean it in the first place. It's easy to say that when you're the now, thank God, former mayor of Philadelphia, like Jim Kenney, who actually danced in the hallway of his office and the worst white man's overbite you've ever seen, dancing in his office going, we are a sanctuary city, yeah. And he high-fives his then chief of staff. And it was bad. I mean, that dude has no rhythm. No rhythm whatsoever. But you didn't think it would ever be a problem for you because you're not a border city. Philadelphia is not located in Texas. So you didn't think it would ever come back and bite you. And here it is now biting you. So all these Democrats have created this problem. Now, the mayor of Edison, New Jersey, who's also a Democrat, his name is Sam Joshi, says he was made aware that buses of migrants were coming into his city of Edison, New Jersey, says he didn't know the migrants wanted to go into New York, and he's not allowing them to stay in Edison. Quote, our position is that Edison Township is that, our position in Edison Township is that they're not welcomed here. They're not. They're illegal, and they belong on the other side of the border. We don't want them in Edison, period. That's the bottom line. Now, I guarantee you, at some point, this mayor of Edison, New Jersey, this Democrat, at one point said he was probably for sanctuary cities, or at least he believed in amnesty. He believed in open borders. He at some point advocated some lefty position that has now led to this problem. And now that it's shown up and actually in his city, because he never thought it would, all of a sudden now he's turning around and going, oof, we don't want you here. Well, then why did you extend the invitation in the first place? You didn't care when it was a situation that was affecting people on the southern border. You didn't care if it was Texas's problem. Screw Texas. Who cares? The heck with Texas. You didn't care. Now it's happening in Edison, New Jersey, and you're turning around and going, these people don't belong here because they're illegal immigrants. But you let them come by your invitation. You just figured they were so many thousands of miles away, they would never take you up on it. Well, now they're taking you up on it. And you don't like it. And I get it. And you probably don't have enough food for them either. Well, they don't. I mean, they don't have enough food. And, you know, bringing it back to me being Italian, somebody shows up at my house, if I don't have a thing of, you know, stuffed shells or something ready to go, I'm at least a little charcuterie. You know, I'm nervous. I'm not feeling good about myself at that moment. But I'm not extending the invitation to somebody who's thousands of miles away, thinking that they would just pop in. And now these people are popping in. And it's very awkward. This is interesting, too. They say a message posted on a social media account for Jersey City, New Jersey, said the city's emergency management agency reports that approximately 10 buses from various locations in Texas and one from Louisiana have arrived at various transit stations throughout the state, including Secaucus, Fanwood, Edison, and Trenton, which is the state capital. About 397 migrants had arrived at these locations since Saturday. Quote from the governor, this is clearly going to be a statewide conversation, so it is important that we wait for some guidance from the, this is from the mayor, from the governor here on next steps as buses continue to roll in. A spokesperson for the governor of New Jersey said, New Jersey is being used as a transit point for migrants, almost all of whom continued into New York City. And they are closely coordinating with federal and local officials, including our colleagues across the Hudson River. In New York City, a spokesperson for City Hall said Monday that the city had led the nation in responding to this national humanitarian crisis, providing compassion, care, shelter, and vital services to more than 161,000 migrants. The Texas governor said that they are treating asylum seekers, they're accusing the Texas governor of treating the asylum seekers like political pawns and dropping off families in surrounding areas in the cold, dark of night with train tickets to travel to New York City and Chicago. What if they want to go, though? First of all, why is it incumbent upon Texas to keep everybody who comes into this country illegally? Why does it have to fall in Texas just because they're a border state? And you won't even let them do anything to stop it. You won't even let Texas put up barbed wire. The federal government comes in and takes it down. You won't let Texas put anything in the river to keep people from crossing it. You won't let Texas arrest illegal immigrants. So why should this all fall on the state of Texas to keep everybody who comes into this country illegally? And when it happens to you, and when Texas says, we're going to drop them at your door, and maybe the people want to come, you turn around and act like they're the scum of the universe, and you don't want them in your city. Doesn't seem very hospitable to me. Perhaps maybe you people should take down your hate has no home here signs, you hypocritical lefties. This is The Dana Show. It's me, Rich Zeoli, in for Dana. We're coming right back.
Elevate your commute, workouts, or downtime with the Dana Show podcast. Unleash the power of knowledge at your fingertips by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Some breaking news here on the Dana Show. The embattled president of Harvard, Claudine Gay, is going to resign. She is going to be out as president. I'm surprised she made it this far, but we'll talk more about that. For now, I got five things for you. Let's do it.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Ohio troopers are working to capture a runaway pig in McDonald's. That's right, a pig caused some chaos at the McDonald's parking lot. Law enforcement officers tried to chase it. It's not easy to catch a pig, as you know. It's easier than catching a chicken, though, like Rocky would tell you. But the Ohio State Highway Patrol said on Friday troopers worked to wrangle a pig escapee that began wandering around a McDonald's in Springfield. It was a bit of oinking around in Springfield this week after a pig got loose and went hog wild. Don't you love the puns? Anyway, they got the pig into custody, and I think he'll soon be used for McDonald's bacon. A couple was forced to give up babies and embryo, and a mix-up has now been settled with the clinic. The unimaginable mishap led to a woman giving birth to the babies of complete strangers and then having to give them up. Oof, that's no fun. And it's the kind of thing that makes people very, very nervous. You can imagine the lawsuit here. The pair had splashed out $100,000 for treatment at this fertility clinic. And then it turns out that they were from the wrong papa. Complete strangers. Yeah, now that one, watch for the lawsuit on that one coming. Frontier Airlines, 16-year-old kid flying solo, ended up in Puerto Rico instead of Ohio. So, you know, Florida teenager is traveling alone, is meant to fly to his mother in Ohio on a Frontier flight, but instead ended up on a flight to Puerto Rico. But he was just thrilled that at least the flight wasn't canceled, because Frontier has an issue with that as of late. The 16-year-old passenger was scheduled to fly from Tampa to Cleveland, but he got on the wrong flight to San Juan, Puerto Rico, and there he is now. So then they had, I guess, put him on another flight, and they said, "We're so sorry." They extended their sincere apologies to the family for letting this boy fly. How does that happen in this day and this post 9/11 day and age? How does he get on the wrong flight, is my question. And in Ohio, speaking of Ohio again, a judge has been suspended from office after 29 ethical violations. An Ohio judge has been suspended by the Ohio Supreme Court after committing nearly 30 ethical violations. Cayuga County Common Pleas Judge Daniel Gall was banned from practicing law in Ohio for 1 year on Friday. Among his various ethics violations include all kinds of different things that go back in a 5-year period dating back from actually even longer, from 2014. Apparently, he abandoned his role as an impartial arbiter, and he demeaned litigators and spectators. He abused contempt and the prestige of his office. And now he's out of a job and won't be able to practice law either. Sounds like he wasn't very, very good at his job. So I guess he'll be working, well, I don't know, maybe he'll be an Uber driver, because it's very profitable, especially on New Year's Eve. I noticed that on New Year's. Did you notice how expensive? If you Ubered on New Year's, you know what I'm talking about. The rates were just through the roof. And finally, a mysterious passport was stamped accidentally, and it let migrants stay in the United Kingdom. And now the Prime Minister's office has no idea how many foreign nationals have been mistakenly allowed to live here indefinitely. But it was a mystery passport stamp that allowed people to stay as long as possible. And once again, as woke as the United Kingdom is, they also don't want them there. Shocking, I know. Coming up on The Dana Show, breaking news around the embattled president of Harvard. And also, Donald Trump will be appealing the decisions of Colorado and Maine. All straight ahead here on The Dana Show. Don't go away.
Craving a daily dose of intellectual adrenaline? Look no further than the Dana Show podcast, where curiosity meets courage, by following on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The president of Harvard University, Claudine Gay, has resigned. It's some breaking news here on the Dana Show. Great to have you with us as we begin a new year. It's me, Rich Zioli, from Dana's affiliate in Philadelphia. I hope your 2024 is off to a great start. Going to be a crazy year, no doubt about it. So Claudine Gay has resigned. Remember a couple things that took place here. First of all, she was one of the college presidents in front of Congress who refused to denounce all the anti-Semitic protests that were happening on college campuses. And those of us who are stalwart defenders of freedom of speech took no pity on people like Claudine Gay or the former president from the University of Penn, because these people enabled the censorship to happen in academia to such a degree that when FIRE, the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, would rank schools based on their freedom of speech, these schools came in at the absolute bottom of the barrel. You'd get in trouble on Harvard if you misgendered somebody, if you used the wrong pronoun for somebody, or if you were accused of fat phobia, whatever the hell that means, or you were a controversial speaker. They would ban the speaker. They would cancel comedians. They would not allow books, lectures. These colleges would cancel a lecture or debate on abortion, because a woman who had an abortion on college campus might be triggered by that, so they wouldn't let it happen. I mean, these places were the worst. When you engage in censorship, you not only can come under fire for what you ban, you can also come under fire for the kind of speech you allow. So these colleges couldn't turn around and say, well, listen, yeah, we allow this vile anti-Semitic speech to occur, because we just allow all kinds of speech. We don't monitor, we don't censor. People can say whatever they want. We're just absolute First Amendment absolutists. No, they have been people who have been leading the censorati, the censorship, the destruction of freedom of expression, so that all under the name of diversity, equity, and inclusion, they can have all these sheep who are out there believing and saying the exact same things all the time. So when they allow the vile anti-Semitic language to occur, all these protests on their college campuses, and they get called out for it, you don't have a lot of people then defending them. There's no defense of what they allowed. You're allowed to come under fire for what speech you allow if you allow censorship. But the University of Pennsylvania president resigned. She's still on the payroll, making $200,000+ a year as a faculty member. But a lot of donors at Penn turned around and said, no way, we want her gone. Claudine Gay survived, though. I mean, she's a black female. She survived for a while. And then people started learning about her plagiarism. And she plagiarized a lot. She plagiarized, she has accusations of over 60 different times where she borrowed somebody else's academic thinking and turned around and claimed it for her own. And people kept turning around saying, how is this person surviving this now that this has come to light? And she was ripping off people's intellectual thought. And everybody turned around and said, well, I mean, if Claudine Gay were a white male, she'd be out of a job in a heartbeat. No question about it. But again, the donors have turned around, and a lot of them who are Jewish have turned and said, we're not going to give the school any money. Once you lose the donors, you're done. I mean, at that point, you're done. And for people whose academic thought that she was ripping off all these years, they turned around and they said, this is not okay. You don't get to do this. You don't get to do this. You don't get to just claim somebody else's work as your own and think that that's going to be okay. Because everybody who works hard in academia to put things together, Carol Swain's a great example. Dr. Carol Swain, who was on my radio show in Philadelphia a couple weeks ago, was one of the people who Claudine Gay ripped off her intellectual thought. Carol Swain is a conservative thinker. She's fantastic. And what she said regarding that whole incident is that Claudine Gay needs to go for what she did. And she had some thoughts on this. She tweeted out a few weeks ago. She said, I have some free unsolicited advice for Harvard University. Number one, stop listening to the apologists for plagiarism. Number two, fire Claudine Gay post haste. She can be relieved of duties under the terms that are negotiated. Stop listening to the racist mob of whites and blacks who cry racism while being among the worst offenders. Hire the best man or woman who can steer the university back towards sanity. Appeasing the Marxist identity politics mob should not be a consideration. The person for the job might be a middle to older age white Jewish man who believes in classical liberalism. Classical liberalism, by the way, is not modern liberalism. Modern liberalism is statism. It's where they want to shut down debate, and they don't want freedom. They want to control everything, control every aspect of your life. Classical liberalism is obviously what this country was founded on. It's freedom. It's liberty. We don't have that. The left does not practice classical liberalism. That's why I don't even call people on the left liberals. They're not liberals, they're statists. And they, so call them lefties or call them statists, but don't call them liberals. They're not. Liberal is a word that denotes, or at least used to in this country, denotes freedom, liberty, intellectual thought, and limited government. I mean, classical liberals, Thomas Jefferson was a classical liberal. But we don't practice classical liberalism in this country. What you have today is something called illiberalism. Illiberalism, which is the opposite. You don't have freedom. You have complete control in every aspect of life, including what you can say and what you can't say. And a big part of what you see, what happens with this whole disinformation nonsense, you know, the government comes out and works with big tech to silence you, to suppress your thoughts, to control your thoughts, to tell you what is true and what is real and tell you what's not. That's all illiberalism. That's all what that is. She continued with her advice to Harvard, Dr. Carol M. Swain. She said, have a sit-down conversation with the people who have been harmed by the plagiarism of Claudine Gay and the system that protects her. Recognize that Harvard's systemic racism and classism have far-reaching efforts. Apologize to alumni, students, parents, and donors who have been harmed and embarrassed. and she's right in all of her advice to Harvard. And as somebody who was plagiarized directly by the now former president of Harvard, she has a lot of reasons to say what she said. And so good for Dr. Swain for speaking out, and goodbye to the now former president of Harvard, who will still be fine. She'll still get a big severance package. She'll still probably wind up being on the payroll in some capacity. She'll get another job if necessary in academia. They'll be fine. And this is the problem. I mean, this is the problem with Democrats in America today. It's what James Carville said. He said that the Democrat Party in America has become the party of the faculty lounge. Elite coastal, he says coastal liberals, but again, I don't call them liberals, but elite, coastal elites and the academic faculty lounge. This is why you've got blacks and Hispanics who are now saying that they're going to vote for Trump. A key demographics that Joe Biden needs, they're now saying they're voting for Trump. It's for the exact same reason. It's the reason why when James Carville's group did that polling memo, the title of the synopsis, the conclusions reached by them were, "This is grim." Three words, "This is grim." And as part of that, what they found was that the coalition of working people in this country, people that actually work for a living, and get their hands dirty and their backs hurt and work their butts off every single day, that coalition of people believes that Trump or the Republicans do more for them than the Democrats do. And that's the first time since they started asking the question when Franklin Delano Roosevelt was president that the coalition of working class voters said, "We say the Republicans can do more for us than the Democrats can." No surprise. The Democrat Party is the party of Claudine Gay. The Democrat Party is the party of the academic coastal elites, the faculty lounge. I mean, just ask yourself this question. Who in real life uses the term Latinx, for example? Nobody. It came up, they created it in college campuses. I mean, the entire transgender movement was born there. The whole notion that we're going to say science is real except for biology, and that can change on a dime. The fact that college campuses will turn around and say, it's perfectly fine for a man to say he's a woman and then compete against women in swimming, for example, and then beat them and walk around the locker room. There's junk hanging out. That's all college campuses. That's academia. You know, they believe in this stuff, and America doesn't. You know, you ask the average mom and dad out there, and I'm telling you, this is an overwhelming number. Ask people who are parents, even if they vote Democrat or even if they lean more to the center. I'll give you a good example. I know these two women, and they're both involved very heavily in the water safety movement in this country. And they're both, I would say, one is more politically moderate but leans to the right. The other one is more politically moderate but leans to the left. And on this issue of allowing dudes to identify as women and then beat women at their own game, literally, to steal the gold medal from them, they're absolutely staunchly opposed to it. They think it's outrageous. They think it's completely wrong. Because here you have these young women who've worked so hard to get there. You take, say, for example, Riley Gaines. Riley Gaines, who's out there constantly now being destroyed and called a misogynist and everything like this, and all these horrible words that are said about her, a transphobe, all these, not a misogynist, they call her a transphobe. She was the one who turned around at that congressional hearing and threw it right back in the face of the Democrat who asked her the questions and accused her of being a misogynist for not defending the rights of women. But Riley Gaines is somebody who's out there saying, you know what, I shouldn't have to lose. I've been working since I was a kid here, giving up weekends and nights. And when my friends were out playing, I was swimming. I was practicing. I was competing. I get to college and now I got to lose out to a dude. In academia, they think that is perfectly fine. In fact, in academia, if you don't agree with that, then you are the problem. So you have to change your thinking. And you have to accept this. If you don't like the fact that a man named Will Thomas, who identifies as Leah Thomas, gets in the pool and beats women when he could not beat male swimmers and competes against them and then takes the gold and takes the trophy, if you've got a problem with that as a girl, then you are the problem. You need to go to re-education camp and you got to change your thinking. And I'm telling you, the overwhelming majority of Americans finds that to be ridiculous. But the overwhelming majority of people in academia think that's how the world is supposed to be. And the other problem, too, is that I'll give you another great example. I mean, they've got the sorority that's suing the young women who live in a sorority house on a college campus. They had to accept a guy who identifies as a woman as one of their sorority members. And he lives in the house with them. And he walks around showing off his twig and berries and takes showers and apparently is sometimes a little bit stimulated. And the girls are like, no, this is not cool. This is my house. I live here. This is supposed to be a safe space. And when I was in college, I heard about that term safe spaces all the time. You have safe spaces for women. It was a big thing. And these young girls turned around and sued their national fraternity, their national sorority, and said, this is not okay. And the school and the national sorority said, you girls are the problem, that you don't like the fact that this biological male is living in your house. Academia is completely out of touch with the thinking of mainstream America. Oh, the overwhelming thinking of it. And that's why you see Hispanic and Black voters trending towards Trump. It's why working class people are too. Because Hispanic people, Black people, working class people, they're all just people, you know? And people have a hard time with the notion that this is okay in America. And when James Carville, who's a very smart guy, comes out and says that the Democrat Party has become the party of the faculty lounge, it means that the Democrat Party has completely lost touch with what it means to associate with people who are actually living in reality. Because academia is not reality. It's its own little subculture that completely turns around and reaffirms the thinking of itself over and over again. Because it doesn't allow dissent. And that's not America. And that's why the Democrat Party is in such trouble going forward. And Claudine Gay's fall from grace here, so to speak, the fact that it took this long, it's exactly the problem. And that America right now is so embattled with all this DEI stuff because it all came from college campuses. It's where it began. And it will continue as long as we let it continue. And it has to stop. It has to stop. This is the Dana Show. We got a lot to chat about. Donald Trump is going to file his appeal to the Supreme Court, and the Epstein documents are coming out. And just a reminder, Jeffrey Epstein did not kill himself. We'll be right back.
Whether you're a policy wonk, a news junkie, or simply someone hungry for insightful discourse, the Dana Show podcast has your back. Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, it's the time on the Dana Show where we talk a bit about one of my favorite states, so let's do it.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Indeed, this Florida man was arrested for deliberately hitting deer, and he filmed it for TikTok, according to the police. Clay Kinney tried killing 5 deer, according to police. Now, first of all, I think deer are just basically rodents with hooves. But anyway, hooves. A Florida man was arrested Thursday after he intentionally ran over a deer and filmed it for TikTok. Ugh. He was charged with 5 counts of animal torment and 1 count of animal torture. He was also charged with 1 count of a moving traffic violation. An affidavit from the Seminole County Sheriff's Office, which was obtained by Fox 35 Orlando, explained that police were investigating him after they learned the video. The footage reportedly shows Kinney attempting to run over a group of 5 deer and fatally striking 1. My question is, was the guy not worried at all about any damage to his vehicle? He was driving a Chevy Tahoe. Anyway, he got in trouble for this because you're not supposed to torture animals, even if they are deer, and deer don't get in trouble when they crash into our cars. But listen, life's not always fair. What can I tell you? I had a deer once, and it totaled my car, and the deer turned around and gave me a look and ran away. And he was fine. My car, however, was total. But nevertheless, you should never torture animals. This guy is not cool. Not cool at all. This Florida man, according to Rare.com, was arrested for robbing a Little Caesars in a ski mask and then leading police in a wild goose chase. One man wanted pizza so badly that he decided to commit a stick-up, and that's what police in Pembroke Pines, Florida, allege happened at a Little Caesars restaurant. He was arrested after robbing the joint, then leading police on a chase that resulted in a crash. He allegedly was wearing a black ski mask, all black clothing, and black gloves during the holdup, in which he pistol-whipped an employee and demanded cash. Did he also demand the pizza, is my question? He then took off and raced his way to the Florida Turnpike with police in hot pursuit, but that ended when he crashed into a median wall at County Line Road. He's now facing multiple charges, including aggravated battery with a deadly weapon and robbery with a firearm. No word if he got cash, pizza, or injuries from the crash. They don't know that. But I would imagine if you're going into a pizzeria to steal, you're going to take pizza too, I would think. You're going to take the cash. You're not going to pay for the pizza, and you're going to take some pizza. I mean, you're about to go on the run, so at least having a hot, delicious pizza next to you while you're on the run from the cops, I would think. But again, it doesn't sound like this guy was thinking very much, so who knows? Maybe he just got the cash. All right, coming up here on The Dana Show, Donald Trump is going to appeal to the United States Supreme Court. The decision by Colorado and Maine to Rhode Island, to bar him from the presidential ballot. Will the Supreme Court grant him cert? What will they say? We'll talk about that. Plus, bad news for Biden as we start 2024. This is The Dana Show. Don't go away.
I'm curious, what sort of holiday foods have you been enjoying over the last few days?
Well, I've been eating everything that's put in front of me. I've eaten pasta, which I love. Yeah. Eating a lot of chicken parmesan. I've been eating all Italian foods, basically.
And ice cream.
Chocolate chip ice cream.
He loves his ice cream. And who doesn't love a good chicken parm? Am I right? Am I right? Come on. Welcome back to The Dana Show. It is me, Rich Zeoli, in for Dana, hour number three here. Great to be with you. A lot of breaking news this afternoon. Harvard's embattled president, Claudine Gay, has resigned. I have here the resignation letter. And as usual, she's doing what most people on the left do, which is blame other people for their own actions. She writes here in a letter that I'm tired of something or other, and it's frightening to be subjected to personal attacks and threats fueled by racial animus. So once again, even though she has been a serial plagiarizer and she was a disaster in front of Congress, it's the fact that she's the victim of racism. That's why she is resigning as the president of Harvard. It's just so typical, isn't it, of the left? They can never just take responsibility for anything that they do, ever, 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 ever. We talked a lot about immigration today. Chicago, much like New York City, is dealing with this illegal immigration problem, and they hate it. They hate it. They absolutely do. But more and more of them now are realizing that this problem they brought on themselves. But people on the left, though, they're never going to take responsibility for it. You know, they're not going to turn around and say this is Biden's fault. They're not going to turn around and say, hey, we did this by having our hate has no home here signs on our lawns. We did this by making our cities sanctuary cities. Instead, what they're going to do is they're going to blame the border states. How dare Texas send these people here? How dare Texas send these vile human beings here? So here's a couple clips of the Chicago mayor, Brandon Johnson. Let's start, Steve, with cut number 10, please.
But what we can have is a governor in the state of Texas acting the way he is acting. And quite frankly, the rogue buses that are being dropped off across this country in the middle of the night, leaving people with no real support at all, no coordination with the local municipalities, that type of chaos is certainly dividing our country.
No, it's not. What's dividing our country is the fact that the border's open. It's actually not divided. The country's united. The border needs to be closed. This is on you guys. This is why Biden is so unpopular, even among Hispanic voters right now. Then he, of course, continues to blame the governor of Texas for the failure of the Biden administration to do anything about the border, even though Texas has been trying its best, putting up barbed wire, putting up things in the river to stop people from crossing. Forget all that. It's still Texas's fault because they're just not keeping everybody who comes into this country illegally. Cut number 10. Okay, let's play 9 then. Okay, I'm sorry, not 9, 11, 11, 11, excuse me.
Is very clear is that not only are we providing mental health related services as well as vaccinations and health screenings and providing medical health care for these families when they arrive the moment they get off those buses, we're not seeing that same treatment on the border. In other words, there's no health screenings, no vaccinations. That process at the border is absolutely raggedy and reckless. But we cannot have a governor who decides that he's going to cling to the vestiges of Jefferson Davis.
Well, who? Huh? Jefferson Davis. They had Title 42, which would have kept people out of the country based on the COVID pandemic. And the Biden administration lifted that. So, you know, here you have a guy complaining that we're not doing health screenings at the border. Dude, it was your president who was the one that lifted Title 42, which would have had health screenings at the border and would have used the pandemic as a reason to keep people out. That's on you. I mean, this is you guys. You did this. This is your problem you've created. Here's the Boston mayor, the mayor of Boston, who also hates the idea that Governor Greg Abbott dares to send people from Texas to the state of Massachusetts. Cut 12.
Every person, every human being has the legal right to come to the United States and seek asylum or shelter. And those policies have been in place for a long time. But when the review of that individual's particular situation and the then decision to allow the pathway to stay and or work authorization that comes along with that, when that process is so drawn out, people are stuck. They are looking to work, looking to contribute, looking to be in a safe democracy.
We just don't want them in this city having all those things. So let's just be very, very clear about that. Here's a Chicago alderman. His name is Brian Cincho Lopez. I may not have said that correctly, but oh well. Cut number 5.
We've seen the conditions worsening because of the tactics that continue to be worsening. Now we see Governor Abbott even sending people by plane, which is putting really our communities not only at risk, but is really putting our whole communities at the brink of collapse.
So why not tell the president to do something about it then? Why not tell your president, since you're a Democrat too, why not tell the president, hey, Mr. President, do something about this. Fix it. Fix the problem. Or at least let the states that are trying to fix the problem do something about it instead of sending people down there to take down the barbed wire that they put up in Texas. Do something about it. Instead, they just want to complain, because this is the thing about the left, and it's very obvious here. They believe in open borders. They just don't want the people coming to their cities. They believe in open borders. They believe that everybody should be able to come here, anybody around the world, anywhere at any time, come in, but stay in Texas. Come into America, but only stay in Texas. And if you try to leave Texas, you should not be allowed to do that. They basically want Texas to have to absorb all of this. And when it comes to their doors, they don't want it. And that's when they start complaining and whining and blaming the state for not just absorbing everybody, as they sit there and say in the very same breath that everybody has a right to come here. And here's from CBS News, pointing out the fact that U.S. Customs and Border Protection is now on track to process, well, a whole lot of people in just December alone. Cut 19.
New Customs and Border Protection data obtained by CBS News show that agency is on track to process more than 300,000 migrants, an all-time monthly high. That includes record numbers of families and children. Meanwhile, cities, states, and federal law enforcement report being overwhelmed as the ripple effects spread from border communities to all across the country.
All right, now, I started the show today by saying to you that Biden's numbers within core constituencies that he needs, blacks and Hispanics, are a disaster for him. And that Hispanic voters and black voters are trending towards Trump. In fact, Trump has a lead now with Hispanic voters. Do you think maybe this could be part of the reason for that? I think it's all of it. I think it's the economy. I think it's the open border. I think it's the disastrous policies that that have affected us overseas. I think it's all of the above. But Biden is starting 2024 in a very, very bad place. Now, I was on Fox News yesterday and I said, Democrats are waking up to the fact that Joe Biden is a disaster in the making. That's why you have people like David Axelrod coming out and saying he can't win. They're saying it out loud now because they know he's a disaster. Here's Steve Kornacki from MSNBC talking about Biden's approval rating as we begin the new year now. This is not good. Not good for him anyway. Cut 13.
How about the Democratic end of things? Joe Biden seems poised to be the Democratic nominee. What kind of year has he had politically? Well, again, he started 2023 coming off those good midterms for Democrats, and his approval rating, 46-50, wasn't that bad, but it's taken a hit this year. And as we start to close out the year, our final NBC poll had him at just 40% approval, 57% disapproval. How does this compare to past presidents entering their reelection year? Here you can see it. Here's the 40 that we have Biden at right now. These are all the final polls heading into the election year, reelection year that NBC conducted. You just see all the recent presidents. Look, Trump got beat in 2020. He was at 44 heading into his reelection year. Bush Sr. got beat in 92. He was at 52 and heading south rapidly there. But you see how that number compares. That's the lowest. That's the lowest in an NBC poll for an incumbent facing a reelection year.
That's not good. That's the lowest in an NBC poll for an incumbent facing re-election. And the year just started. So things are going to get a whole lot worse. The other point I made yesterday was, as bad as Joe Biden is now, how much worse is he going to be in the fall? I mean, if he's got a debate on a general election stage, how much worse does he get by November? He's the disaster now. How much worse does he get? He can't even get out the fact that he's eating delicious chicken parmesan without stumbling on his words. Now, Steve Kornacki made a point. If you notice, he said he's on track to be the nominee. Democrats don't want him to be. They have a Kamala Harris problem. The Kamala Harris problem is that she's even worse. She's even more unpopular than Joe Biden is. She's as much of a disaster, if not more, than he is. Otherwise, it'd be a no-brainer. I mean, if she was a good politician, she has horrible political instincts, she's not well-liked. If she was, he'd be gone, and she'd be the nominee, and that'd be the end of it. The problem for them, though, is that they can't just take out the first black woman vice president and put in another white dude like Gavin Newsom. This is where the Michelle Obama rumors come in, because everybody says that that becomes the answer for the Democrats then. You know, every person is not a person. You're a member of a group. And so they don't look at people as people. They look at what demographics you fit in their whole DEI world. So for them, they put Michelle Obama in. Well, now you have a black woman, so you don't have to worry about the fact that you've shoved Kamala Harris to the side. I don't know if there's any truth to those rumors, but obviously they're out there, they're circulating, and the Obamas seem to be everywhere and seem to be pulling the strings and controlling things, that's for sure. But the reason why I bring this up is because if you want to get rid of Joe Biden, how do you do it? You know, and the only pathway for Democrats to do it is to go through Hunter Biden. That's the only option they have. If they want to really truly get rid of this guy, because they know he's going to lose, they know he's a disaster, they know that he cannot recover from these poll numbers. You can't recover from the fact that you've lost Hispanic and black voters. You can't recover from these things. The only thing you can do then is use the son as leverage. You know, if you do not pardon him and get out of this race, he's going to go to federal prison and he's going to be dropping dimes on you and dropping dimes on everybody. And it's going to lead to you being tainted and losing regardless. But now you'll lose because you're a corrupt president. Your legacy's gone and everything else. And whereas you can fall back on the idea that your poor son has been subjected to so much because of you, and you need to save him from his own addiction. And so you're going to do these things for him and blah, blah, blah. And you get out of the race. Here's Karine Jean-Pierre, the White House press secretary, as she talks about Hunter Biden and the business deals and everything else, claiming that there's no evidence for these things. Cut number one.
But you said it, Jonathan, there is no evidence. And it's not just coming from Democrats, it's coming from Republicans as well. There's no there. And it's so unfortunate that Republicans in Congress want to focus on the president's family instead of the American family. We want to work with them in a bipartisan way to get things done. We just talked about, leading to your question, we just talked about a list of things that I discussed, that we discussed, that we really need to work on for the American family.
We really need to work on these things for the American family. You know, the American family wants, they want a better economy. And they really find it egregious when the corruption of the president and his family is so front and center as their family is struggling. And that is just a fact. That's a political reality. And a lot of people think politicians are corrupt, but when they're corrupt and then they're hurting economically, that's when it becomes really offensive. This is the Dana Show. We got a lot to chat about. It's a busy afternoon. Don't go away.
Ready to grow your intellectual Rolodex? Download the Dana Show podcast and join the ranks of those who refuse to settle for the same old boring content on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a lot of breaking news going on today here on the Dana Show, but got five more things for you, so let's do it.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So you probably heard by now, but Green Day made a lot of people very, very upset when they reworked the lyrics to a hit song to trash the MAGA agenda during the Dick Clark New Year's Eve Rockin' Eve on ABC. "I'm not part of a MAGA agenda," said lead singer Billy Joe Armstrong as he sang it during Dick Clark's show. And a lot of people were very, very unhappy with that because they just said, dude, can you just leave it alone? It's freaking New Year's Eve. But they were never really punk rock anyway. They sold that a long time ago. Meanwhile, Trump's New Year's Eve party at Mar-a-Lago featured Vanilla Ice. That's right, 90s rap star Vanilla Ice. He was part of the celebration there. And his real name is Rob Van Winkle. I don't know if you know that or not. Rob Van Winkle entertained the crowd at former President Trump's resort alongside another 1990s pop culture staple, a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle. And Vanilla Ice performed, and Trump was right there hanging out. They also had an Elvis impersonator, and apparently had a lot of fun. In a speech to attendance, Trump excused former First Lady Melania Trump, who he said was spending the holiday in a Miami hospital at her mother's bedside. I'm sure that the media will then accuse Melania of just trying to hide away and not be near him. Ian Ziering is an actor. He was attacked by bikers after a traffic altercation. He was an actor from the show 90210. He was punched by a group on Hollywood Boulevard before he fled to safety. And the video of this has gone viral because he was attacked and kicked by a group of mini bike riders in Los Angeles on Sunday. And the Beverly Hills 90210 actor, he's 59 years old, was seen clashing with one mini bike rider on Hollywood Boulevard, approaching them and kicking them before striking them on the head. He was then attacked by a rider who attempted to strike him before the actor pushed the rider to the ground. He was surrounded by other bikers from the group who wore helmets in the exchange and was seen being punched in the head as he attempted to fend off multiple attacks. He ran across the road in an attempt to flee to safety before he was caught by the riders and punched again. Police continue to investigate. National parks will now require reservations in 2024. The measure is going into effect from many national parks across the country, including Yosemite. If you want to go, you'll have to make a reservation. They said, "We received many positive comments from people who enjoy the guaranteed arrival time and reduced congestion as they tried the pilot program. So now you'll be able to enjoy the national parks with less waiting. Maybe you'll be able to scalp tickets. I don't know how that works." And finally, optimism abounds on Wall Street this new year. Wall Street Journal, had a story about this, that a strong economy has upended gloomy forecasts for 2023. But I will tell you is when the media starts saying the economy is going to be great, be very, very careful and hold on to your wallets, kids. More to come here on The Dana Show with me, Rich Zeoli, and for Dana. Don't go away.
Tired of the same old predictable commentary? Spice up your day with a Dana Show podcast, where dynamic discussions, compelling guests, and Dana's unique perspective await. Download on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm gonna be super mindful of 2024 as we're into an election year. Look, we understand what the American people went through these past 3 years, right? We came out of a pandemic, right? A pandemic that we haven't seen in 100 years. And when the president walked in, the economy was upside down. And so we get it. We get that it's gonna take a little bit of time for folks to feel what the Bidenomics has been able to do. That's not something that I'm saying, that's something that economists have said, right? It takes a little bit of time, but doesn't mean that the president's not going to continue to work.
It doesn't mean that the president's not going to continue to work because people just have to understand that things are great. All right. Things are great. Can't you feel it? Here's the problem for Democrats. All right. As National Review points out, there's reality is the first thing. The first problem for Democrats trying to sell you on the fact that everything's rosy and wonderful is just reality. You deal with this all the time. And I mean, you go grocery shopping, right? I do in my house anyway. I handle, for the most part, the grocery shopping. I like it. I do. I like it. I usually go in the morning since I'm on in the afternoons in Philadelphia. I'm on from 3 o'clock to 7 p.m. So you can tune in if you like later today on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. You can listen on the Odyssey app. The prices in the grocery store are insane. I mean, they're even making commercials now about it where there's this one guy, I forget exactly the company, but it's a car company. And the guy goes in to order avocado toast and he says, but hold the avocado. And so the woman just says, you just want toast? And he goes, yeah. It's like, we understand how expensive things are right now, but we're holding the line on prices. When it jumps into the realm of advertising, when you've got companies out there that are using the economy, the bad economy, as part of their advertising message, that's a problem. I mean, that's a problem for the administration. It means that people are feeling the effects of how expensive things are, and you just can't hide that. You can't pretend things are great. It's when people go shopping, they pay. They have to pay for things. It's not free. And so, well, it's free for some people, but for the most of us, we have to actually pay, and we feel it, and it hurts. So there's that. The reality of everything. People can see their own budgets. They can still see that things are more expensive than they were before inflation took flight. And their wages have not kept up. I mean, you need an extra, I think it's something along the lines of, it's like an 18% raise or something just to keep up with all of the increased costs of everything else. People also see that higher interest rates have made it very difficult now to buy a new house or a new car, take out loans, all these things. There's sticker shock with these things. I have friends who would love to be able to buy a new home. You know, they've kind of outgrown their home. They can't. They're stuck because they refinanced under Trump. They have a good mortgage rate, 2.5%, 3%. Now they're looking at what, 8%, 8.5%? I mean, that adds so much money every single month that you're just paying in interest alone. And people want to buy a new car. They can't because, again, it's the interest is the problem. So you can come out there and you can say Bidenomics, it takes time for it to work and blah, blah, blah. If people don't feel it, all the spin in the world does not change what people feel when they go to buy something. When they take out their credit card or they tap their phone or whatever it is and they look at the price and they go, oh, my God. And they have to scale back on things. And we just had the holiday season and, you know, everybody that I talked to was saying the same thing. The prices have gone up on everything from, yes, your Christmas dinner to the toys you bought for your kids and everything else. Everyone feels it. Then you have the baseline problem. Democrat flacks keep pointing to statistical measures to show how things are better than they were on the day Biden was inaugurated. But Biden was sworn in while they were still near the height of a global pandemic, before there had been any significant distribution of reopenings and vaccines and everything else. Even Biden couldn't make things worse than that. And while there may have been some political traction in 2020 to claiming that the pandemic was Donald Trump's fault in terms of what the voters may have been thinking, nobody thinks that today. You know, I mean, nobody thinks today that it was Trump's fault, even if they thought that in 2020. And I don't really think they did. I think it was more about his tweets. And I think it was more about the fact that Biden, you know, they hit him in the basement. They said he was this nice old man who was going to bring America together and heal everybody from Trump's mean tweets. And the pandemic was going on. But people didn't expect things were going to get this bad economically. So now they look back and they think about how great things were in January of 2021 before Biden became president. And they can keep bringing up COVID. Nobody thinks about COVID anymore. I mean, except for the people that walk around wearing masks all the time outside and when they're bike riding, and they're voting Democrat anyway. I mean, unless you're one of those people, you don't walk around thinking about the pandemic. You don't think about it. You certainly don't blame COVID for the economic problems you're dealing with now. And if you want to, then blame Democrats, because Democrat states are the ones that locked down and shut down and cost a lot of people their jobs. But it's not COVID. It's Biden's spending. It's the spending of Joe Biden that has caused this massive inflation. And that's what everybody's dealing with. And people are smart enough to figure that out for themselves. Or if they're not smart enough to figure it out for themselves, at least they can feel the economic pain directly. That doesn't take a whole lot of intelligence when you are paying your bills. And just comes back to the simple question. You know, I mean, Reagan posed a wonderful question when he said, just ask yourself, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? If the answer to that is yes, then yeah, you stick with Biden. If it's no, you make a change. And that's why Biden's poll numbers stink. National Review points out there's an ideology problem as well with this argument that it's just perception is the problem. Deeply ingrained in the progressive and liberal temperament affecting the party's official and unofficial spokespeople, the corporate media, Democrat voters, is economic pessimism. It's a focus on how the little guy is still hurting even when times appear good. After all, they say if everybody's doing fine, then who needs to expand entitlements or unionize or demand public money for debt forgiveness or complain about inequality or blame corporate greed for high prices or all of those things? So you see, in other words, as Democrats keep trying to push for their socialist utopia, they have to keep pointing out how there's problems out there, how there's inequity out there. I'll give you a great example of this. Here's a clip of Karine Jean-Pierre. Karine Jean-Pierre discussing how the president has always put, and remember, there's a big difference between equality and equity. Cut number two.
Look, the president has always put equity at the center of every policy he's put forward, every legislation that he's put forward, because we understand that many communities have been left behind.
You see, if you start every day by pointing out how things are terrible for people, how there's corporate greed and there's people at the top getting richer and your life stinks and you need more money and you need to, we got to spread the wealth around and all this other stuff, and you're going into an election year, you then can't 5 seconds later turn around and tell everybody how great things are. And this is the ideological problem that Democrats have. In order to achieve their socialist utopia, they keep convincing everybody that the government needs to come in and take people's money and give it around. Take reparations, for example. There's a great meme that I saw today about California. My buddy Michael Pelka sent me this today. And it said, here's a state that never had slaves. That's going to take money from people who never owned slaves to give it to people who never were slaves. But that's the progressive mentality in a nutshell right there, in a very, very amusing little cartoon that is exactly the issue. So if you start every day by telling people how the economy stinks because of greed and you need the government to make it better because you're a victim and you're a victim and without that, and then 5 seconds later turn around and go, but trust us, it's really good. You just don't feel it. How does that logically jive with anybody? It doesn't. And all it does do is just remind people who are working for a living that they're getting screwed. And this is why Hispanic voters are trending Trump, and it's why Black voters are trending Trump, and it's why working people are trending Trump, because they're tired of having their money taken from them to give to people who don't actually work. There's another problem Democrats have too. It's the spokesperson problem. Democrats are having trouble getting people to buy their message because nobody buys the messenger anymore. Joe Biden just isn't capable at this juncture of persuading anybody of anything, and the more voters see or hear him, the worse things get. I'll give you a great example. As Biden did his little New Year's Eve interview with Ryan Seacrest, he talked about factories. He talked about all the economic problems. And again, you listen to this and you go, how does this either inspire people, motivate people, or give anybody a sense that this guy can make things better for them? Here's cut number nine.
Well, one of the big highlights stands out for me is my dad used to have an expression. He'd say, Joey, a job's about a lot more than the paycheck. It's about your dignity. It's about respect. So many people through the Midwest and in the center of the country, their factories are shipped overseas the last couple of times out, and they were losing hope and faith. So we brought a lot of jobs back to the United States. People are in a position to be able to make a living now, and they've created a lot of jobs, over 14 million. And I guess when I just feel good that the American people got up. They've been through a rough time with pandemic, but now we're coming back.
You didn't create 14 million jobs. What happened is that as the economy started to reopen after COVID, jobs came back. And the Biden administration took those job numbers and said, we made those jobs. No, you didn't make those jobs. If blue states like California and others reopened, New Jersey and others, and then people were allowed to go back to work, well, guess what? those jobs did not, they're not created jobs. They're jobs that just came back because you finally allowed people to go back to work. Here's Biden's economic, but before I get to that, just the point though of the spokesman, right? Biden does not sell confidence to people. You know, the whole thing, Joey, my dad used to tell me, Joey, you know, a job's about more than a paycheck and everything like this. When you hear him, if you're somebody who right now is struggling economically, you hear that and you go, here's a guy patting himself on the back for apparently bringing all these jobs back. I've had a job all these years, but I have not got a raise all these years. And I am struggling now because prices have gone up and my paycheck has not gone up. So I don't know what you're talking about, but stop taking a victory lap here and patting yourself on the back, man. All right. Because all I know is that I am struggling. My family is struggling because we've had a job. It wasn't the issue about me finding one. In fact, I was able to get one, but my paycheck has not kept up with the cost of inflation because of you. Here's Biden's economic advisor, Jared Bernstein, claiming that people have actually seen their worth increase under Joe Biden, cut 14.
It's obviously something we want to look at, but one of the things we've seen that's been very important is an increase in the net worth or the wealth of not just folks at the top of the scale, but middle and lower income people as well. And in fact, for people in communities of color, we've seen record numbers of increase in wealth. And that's one of the reasons why household balance sheets have actually been in very good shape this time of year.
Household balance sheets are in pretty good shape. Like, what world are these people living in? So see, this is what I mean about the Democrats' problem. And I think that they did a nice job in this article, Dan McLaughlin did, of breaking this down. Economic reality is reality. You know, you can convince people of a lot of things. You can use political spin to make people believe a lot of different things, but what you cannot do is make them believe that they have more money than they do. That doesn't work. You can make them believe a lot of things, but you cannot make them believe that what's in their bank account and the money that goes out every month is actually better than it is. That kind of spin is impossible to do, which is why, economically speaking, it becomes the thing that destroys unpopular presidents, like Steve Kornacki was talking about when he said Biden begins with the lowest polling numbers in NBC history here, in NBC history for an incumbent president, because all the spin in the world does not change economic reality. This is The Dana Show. Don't go away.
Don't let FOMO get the best of you. Stay in the loop and ahead of the curve by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been really fun to hang out with you for the last, day as we began 2024, but also the time I got to fill in for Dana before the holidays, during the holidays. So thank you for that. Appreciate it. It's been a busy day here on The Dana Show with the breaking news that the embattled president of Harvard, Claudine Gay, has officially resigned her post. And of course, now is blaming everybody. Everybody is at fault here except for Claudine Gay. So, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, as usual, like everybody who's a lefty, somebody else is at fault, not them. Not the fact that she plagiarized, was accused of 60 different, I mean, not even accused, I mean, she really did, 60 different times. But no, it's just the fact that people are racist. I mean, what can you say? They're racist. That's the issue. So, you know, I mean, how do you argue with that? The left just screams racism, and then everybody goes, okay, I guess that's the case. Everybody on their side, anyway. But you know, the big problem here that I think we all have to understand is that the DEI industry, the DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, has been destroying this country. It has been destroying this country, and every single person who experiences, whether it's you have to at your job watch those stupid training videos or anything like that, everybody who experiences this knows that America has a problem. The problem is that the left continues to tell everybody that America is in a racist, awful place. But the message is not selling. That's why Black and Hispanic voters are that's why Trump's leading with them. I mean, that message doesn't sell. It's like the same thing with the economy. You know, you keep telling people things are great, people aren't buying it. You keep telling everybody America's this awful, racist place, and people don't buy it. they turn around and they go, yeah, you know what? I think America's actually pretty good. I think your policies stink, but I think America's pretty good. What they do, though, is they see what happens with their own eyes. And the border situation is a great example of this. The border is wide open, and they see this problem, and they see the president of the United States not addressing it. And it just boggles their mind. They go, I don't understand. Why don't you just do something about the border? You have 300,000 people came in December alone. Why don't you just do something? Fix it. Instead, I got to listen to my own mayor whine about it every single day. Why don't you just do something? And Biden doesn't do anything because his party wants open borders. But what that does is it sends a message that the guy is completely ineffectual. He can't get anything done. See, this is, again, this is the problem Democrats have, is that they want open borders and America doesn't. And so when America sees open borders and they turn around, they go, I don't understand. Why can't they just do something about it? And then Biden doesn't, because he doesn't want to upset his own party. And then people turn around and go, you are completely ineffectual. Why can't you just get something done? It's the same problem with when they try and tell you that Bidenomics is great. You just have to wait and see and feel the effects of everything else. And then at the same time, they tell you 2 seconds later that you're a victim and everything stinks. You know, their own message is so incredibly broken, and that is the problem. We will see what the Supreme Court does with Donald Trump. My sense of it is they will hear his case, they will review it, and they will come back and say that neither Colorado nor Maine or Rhode Island has the power to keep Donald Trump off the ballot using the 14th Amendment, since he has not been either tried nor found guilty of anything involving an insurrection, and look to the special counsel Jack Smith to add charges accordingly. But I don't see that coming to the light of day anytime soon. Thanks so much for listening to The Dana Show. I appreciate it. My best to you in 2024. You can follow along on Twitter at Rich Zeoli. I'm now going to go do my own show in Philadelphia on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD. Have a safe, happy, and blessed new year. Thank you for listening.